Hi, this is Tony Foreman, and you've tuned into the Pledge Drive edition of Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. Listener support makes everything you hear on WYPR possible, including this show. Thanks to everyone who's pledged already. If you haven't, we hope you will right now. Please call 410-235-1395 or give online at WYPR.org. And with me this morning is...
Cindy Wolf. I'm always with you.
I love when you
on the show.
When I put you in a situation where you have to remember your name.
Wait, well, no, I'm just like, wait. Well, actually, I would have thought that you would have introduced Carly, who is our guest.
I will. Well, our program today is a bit of a wine around the world vintage report, what's going on. And with us today is Carly Pipitone from 10th Harvest Imports, a little Baltimore homegrown wine importer by the last name Pipitone. From an Italian family.
Yep, Sicilian and Pugliese.
And how are you today, Carly?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Glad you're here with us,
this
Carly.
Is fun.
Chatting with you recently, I know you were just back from Italy, mm-hmm. and you're looking for new old producers to bring in and introduce to people. So I thought it'd be fun to have you on to tell us.
You had a whirlwind trip. You were gone.
What did you find?
Yeah. You did a lot in a short period of time.
It was a whirlwind trip and looking for small farmer producers, interesting growers in kind of off the beaten path regions of Italy. So I was in Alto Adige, up on the border with Austria, flew to Sardinia, saw an amazing producer called Dettori. I was in Piedmont, in Barbaresco and the Roero. And then I also was in Liguria and saw an amazing Vermentino producer called Terenzola.
Excellent. I'm sort of forever on this program talking about how Italy is not all just what you think. It's not just Rome and Florence, as beautiful as they are. I mean, how was your German? How did you do in the Alto Adige?
My German is terrible, so kind of trying to understand the German-accented Italian is the challenge.
A little rugged. So
beautiful region.
So who are you working with up there? Who's doing exciting things? How is their vintage this year?
So everyone is saying that this is a great vintage.
Oh, good.
Colterenzio is who I'm working with in Alto Adige. They are a co-op, which might sound like they're a big, huge corporation, but they actually represent teeny tiny producers. They have 300 growers who work 300 hectares. So these are actually tiny farmers. And everyone has a hectare.
All around one village, right?
Yes.
So it's kind of everybody has a house, and with the house they have their vineyard.
Yep. And it's, they're so tiny parceled up that have been divided over generations and inherited by different families. And the co-op is an opportunity for them to come together, and it's more economically feasible to make wine in a co-op for them.
I know in that part of Italy an awful lot of wineries happened to be co-ops because they're replacing the church. It used to be that the grapes would go to the church as their tithe.
Yeah, to get them into heaven or something.
Is exactly, that yeah. Keep those monks happy so that I can get into heaven.
Yep.
So now those guys, what are they growing up there?
So the white grapes up there are Pinot Grigio, Pinot Bianco, Chardonnay, and the reds, they grow Pinot Nero or Pinot Noir. And the indigenous varietals of Lagrine and Schiava, which are really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I love the Lagrine and the Schiava.
Those are the two great reds of the Austrian Empire. You know, that was vacation land for the Austrians to come down to the Tirol.
Yep, the Sud Tirol, right.
Now, did you bring home anybody present of one of those Tirolese, the Alpine outfits?
I did
the
not.
The little hat with the feather and the...
You should have brought an outfit like that for Eric.
Yeah, he would
I would
great.
Like to see him in the suspenders and the shorts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the little hat. Yes.
Be perfect.
Next time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So any surprises, any food surprises, any...
I ate a lot of lardo, which is one of my favorite things. I think I had lardo in Alto Adige, Piedmont, and Sardinia. So I got to take a tour of lard.
That's great.
It somehow sounds healthier when you say lardo.
Yeah.
When you say lardo, it's somehow sexy. When you say lardo.
I know.
It sounds like, okay, you're
going to
die from it. And what was the weather like at the time that you were in the Alto Adige?
So incredibly warm. You think that Alto Adige is going to be... colder. It's up in the mountains, but it's protected by the mountains. It's a valley that runs in between the mountains going north-south, so it's so protected that it's really a Mediterranean climate, and it was incredibly warm when I was there.
Why don't you take us across from the northeast of Italy to the northwest of Italy, to Piemonte?
In Piedmont, I was in Barbaresco. I mean, it was warm everywhere. It was warm there, too. And I was in the town of Barbaresco and the Roero, a little bit north of there. And I did go up into Bocca, up by Gemme and Gattinara, and actually went to Lago di Orta for the first time.
What was that like?
That was beautiful. It's one of the smallest lakes. I've been to Como, I've been to Garda. I had never been to Orta.
Me either.
Yeah, really beautiful.
Not sure. Good.
Yeah.
So what growers are you working with there? Who did you find? What are you bringing back?
A new producer in Barbaresco that I'm working with is La Ca Nova. It's Marco Rocca. They're a very old family. They had bottles in their cellar going back to the 1800s.
Gosh.
And
that's kind of funny because
exciting.
The name means
the new house.
Yeah.
Right.
The new spot.
Yeah, the new La Ca Nova, La Casa Nuova. The new house, which is actually very, very old, and it's on top of the hill of Montefico and Monte Stefano. So those vineyards are right outside their back door.
Montefico is one of the, maybe my favorite crew in Barbaresco, that's a good place to have your backyard.
It is, yeah, and they make incredible, really great value Barbarescos. I think that they have not been focusing too much on commercial marketing of their product. They've just been doing what they do for years and years, and we will be able to sell them for really great prices.
Good.
Would you, just for fun for listeners, Barolo, Barbaresco, and Brunello, it seems like they lump all three, a lot of consumers lump all three into the same spot.
The three Bs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Barolo and Barbaresco are neighbors, right?
They are, and they work with the same grape, Nebbiolo, versus Brunello, which is in Tuscany, working with the Sangiovese grape, the same grape as Chianti as well.
So, and Barolo, Barbaresco, how would you... or La Ca Nuova, how would you say the style is?
So I love Barbaresco personally because it's a little bit more feminine, softer, more elegant style than Barolo. The soils in Barolo are more clay driven, and in Barbaresco, at least where I was at La Ca Nuova, is a lot more limestone, kind of mineral driven soil. And so the Barolos are the bigger wines meant for aging. And I think Barbarescos are a little bit softer. And then even going further north into the Roero, it's more sandy soils. So even lighter.
Means immediately less tannins.
Yep, exactly.
More charming. Nebbiolo to drink is young wine.
Exactly. Roeros drink young, don't age quite as long, but are a lot more aromatic and perfumed.
And you have a white producer up there, too. That
I do. Hermano Costa. I did get to visit with
them. They're fantastic.
They are. They're amazing. I got to just have dinner with them at their house, their whole family.
Nice. Good.
They're an amazing producer. Their wines were never sold outside of Piedmont, their region. So for them to have their wines in America, they're just so excited.
From Piemonte to Baltimore, I recall visiting there, and it was like a full court press. There were all of a sudden there was one after the other Costa.
The whole family, yeah.
Yeah, just you're surrounded
wonderful.
until you taste everything.
I actually had to babysit the grandchildren because they had to go somewhere for the after dinner, and I just. Watch the two little kids.
That's great.
It's different. It's different being a final customer and being an importer, right?
Yeah.
So, if you don't mind, when we come back on the next segment, would you stay over and talk to us about your producer in Sardinia?
Absolutely.
Good.
So when we come back, it's wine from Sardinia, but it could be any number of topics on food and wine. Public Radio serves up interesting stories every day, and listeners like you make it possible. It's the second day of our Fall Pledge Drive, and we hope you become a member now. Here's what you need to do. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, the Pledge Drive edition. Thanks to everyone who's called in so far. And so Cindy and I are talking to Carly Pipitone from 10th Harvest Imports, a little Baltimore importer, bringing a bunch of Italian wines into the U.S. And you said that you'd had a fascinating visit with a pretty magical grower in Sardinia.
Dettori, yeah. Alessandro Dettori is absolutely amazing. So on the island of Sardinia, which to me, I had never been to Sardinia before. I thought that it looked a lot more like Spain than Italy. Mm-hmm. Just the landscape is so different.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely its own world. Did you hear people speaking Sardo?
Not really, but I wouldn't have been able to understand it, I'm sure.
It's kind of weirdly between Italian and Catalan.
Exactly, yeah. which makes a lot of sense, I guess. And the grape that they grow there most prominently is Cannonau, which is genetically related to Grenache
That's
from
the
Spain.
Grape. Yes.
Right. Although nobody really likes to talk about that.
Grenache is really from Spain and not from France? The French don't like to talk about that.
Yeah, and really the Grenache from Spain and the Cannonau from Sardinia are not all identical, but certain clones are. And Alessandro Dottori was, you know, talking to me about this, and he's like, I don't really care. My vines are over 100 years old. They are here in Sardinia.
Having visited him, he definitely doesn't care.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about anything. He has none of those things to give.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't need to. His wines are amazing.
So what does he produce?
So he produces Cannonau. He also makes several whites, a Vermentino and a Moscato blend. He makes indigenous grape varietals like Pascale and Monica, you know, things that people have probably never heard of, but that are indigenous and native to that part of Sardinia.
Yeah, and the Monica can be quite good.
Yeah, they're amazing.
It's almost like a blueberry flavor to those. Like, how can something in a dry place with so much sun have this little funny bright blue fruit?
And he does almost nothing to the wines. That's also what I loved about him. One of the first things he said to me was that making wine here is easy. And he farms very simply, and he does almost nothing in the cellar. He doesn't add yeasts. He doesn't add sulfites. He doesn't use wood, only uses concrete, cement, and, you know, doesn't add international varietals. He writes on the label, ingredients, grapes, so that you know.
Perfect.
Having tasted a bunch of his stuff, the first time tasting his Vermentino is very different from all the other Vermentinos.
Yeah, it's richer, it's more full-bodied, I thought.
Well, the color, just start with...
It's dark yellow.
You can see, when you're visiting, I visited there at harvest time when I was there, and visiting a lot of growers in Sardinia at that time, and everyone's already harvested, he hasn't, and his grapes are all orange.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
And so that if that tinge is not in the wine, it's probably not anywhere near as ripe, as rich, or powerful, or intense as his.
Yeah, the color is definitely a lot darker, and it's you know that's what I love about his wines. He makes them in the vineyard. He doesn't make them in the cellar.
Yeah, no, there's no question. He's a pretty fascinating guy.
Yep.
Did you have any food that was particularly brilliant while you were there?
You
loved?
They're an agriturismo, so they have all kinds of animals and produce growing on the farm, and I had a ridiculous meal there. The food just kept coming and coming, and it was...
How many lamb courses did you get?
We had a lot of lamb, yeah. And that goes great with the Cannonau, but I did have lardo there as well, and cheese, and it was amazing.
Good.
Lardo from domestic pigs or from Cinghiale?
I think domestic pigs.
Hmm. Yeah, a lot of times those guys, a lot of their charcuterie... That's pork is from Cinghiale because they're all over the island.
Yeah, I didn't see the livestock, but there were chickens and turkeys and geese kind of all over the property. There was a little flock of geese that had just been born, and the little ones kept escaping from the little pen.
That's great. Well, when you visit interesting folks, we hope we can get you back from time to time to talk about some of the cool small growers that you're getting to.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Thanks so much.
Ciao.
Ciao. And next on Foreman and Wolf, we have with us Roberto de la Mota from Mendel Winery in Argentina, in Mendoza. How are you, Roberto?
Fine, very well.
Hi, Roberto. Thanks for joining us.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
So the last person we're speaking to, we're speaking about a lot of small wineries in Italy. So what is the story of Mendoza, and why are all the names Italian?
Practically half part of our population is coming from Spain, and the other 40% is coming from Italy. It's a very European country in South America.
And so tell us about Mendoza, and tell us about Mendel Winery and what you guys are growing.
Okay. Mendoza is, and Argentina is a very traditional wine country. The conquerors coming from Spain arrived with the vineyard because it was in their culture that is in 1561 when Mendoza was founded. Apparently, the founder of Mendoza was a Mr. Castillo, who had a vineyard in Chile before. Vineyard was every time there. After that, in the 19th century, the middle of 19th century, Michel Puget arrived with the mostly Bordeaux varieties, and especially one variety which is our flagship variety is Malbec, and was extremely important in Argentina. And now we are very lucky because we have a very special and very old vineyards planted with Malbec, and this is the reason because we are in Mendel. Mendel is a very old company because the vineyard is old. We have a vineyard planted in 1928. It's a very special Massal selection arrived in Argentina before the Phylloxera in France. And that's the reason because our Malbec is so special.
So besides Malbec, what are the red grapes are you growing?
For us, it's very traditional varieties like Semillon in white. The Semillon was the most important white variety in Argentina, and a little abandoned in the 90s, 80s and 90s. But I started making a Semillon because we have a very special vineyard planted in high altitude in Uku Valley at 1,100 meters altitude, which is around 3,500 feet altitude, which is very cool and very fresh near the Andes Mountain. And there, the Semillon is very, very special in the very calcareous soil. And this is the only white that we have in it now, but we have other red varieties like Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Petit Verdot.
I have to tell you that I think the Semillon from Mendel might be my favorite white wine in South America these days.
Oh, thank you so much.
I'm a giant fan. I was sort of shocked when I tasted it, and I think we bought all we were able to.
Yeah, you know, I made Semillon with my father when I used to work with him in Cavas de Viner. That was in the 80s, and for me it was very, very special. And in 2009 we had one block of very old Semillon, and was the reason because I wanted to preserve the variety and to save a little bit because it was a little abandoned in the region, and nobody asked for Semillon, but now it's a little fashion, and I'm really happy for that.
Yeah, that's awfully nice work. By the way, did your dad make the 77 Cavas Weinert?
Yeah, you know.
That's the first one I ever bought from them, and I loved it.
I was last Saturday in Madrid with Luis Gutierrez, who is the taster for Parker Review, and we tasted with another friend in common, and 77 Malbec from my father, and it was very, very good.
Well, we're going to take another quick break now, and listeners can become part of the team that makes public radio possible. Become a member now during the fall pledge drive. Here's how. So this is Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Thanks to everyone that just called in. The program wouldn't be possible without WYPR members, and we're extremely grateful for your support. And with us is Roberto de la Mota from Mendel Winery in Mendoza. And Roberto, we're talking about the grape varieties that you guys grow. Tell us about the conditions in Mendoza. What makes growing wine in Mendoza unique?
I think it's a very special place because we are just behind the mountains, in the Andes Mountains. It's a very continental climate, very dry, but we have, fortunately, a different altitude to grow the vineyard. And we can start at 950 meters altitude, which is around 3,000 feet, but arriving just practically at 4,000 feet, we can find different places with different climates. And we have three different vineyards in Mendel, one at 950 with the very with the clay in the soil, with some stones. We have another vineyard where we grow the Cabernet Sauvignon in one place called Pedriel. It's in the left bank of Mendoza River. It's a very high, very stony, very dry soil, and the Cabernet grows very well there. And we have another very special vineyard in Uco Valley, in one place called Altamira. Altamira is very, very special, not only because it's very high, it's at 3,500 feet altitude, but it's very special because in the right bank of Tunuyang River is one soil, very special soil with the calcareous. And why this soil is so special? Because it's giving in our wines, in our grapes, very mineral perception, not only in the nose, but especially in the mouth, with a very special note in terms of good acidity, good freshness, and I think it's one of the most spectacular places in Mendoza.
Yeah, the Uco Valley is remarkable to see.
Yeah, of course.
That's having traveled to a lot of different vineyard sites around the world.
I'm really, really happy because just we planted, we finished a new vineyard with 20 hectares more where we put Malbec, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Petit Verdot. But last week, we finalized a new project with 70 hectares of one very remarkable soil there. And normally, we will build a new winery there, and for Mendel, will be fantastic.
That sounds awesome. So you'll be able to increase your capacity a bit.
Yeah, not only for capacity, because it's a new place, very, very good, fantastic, and I think it's very good for the region and very good for us especially.
Roberto, what are some of your favorite dishes that go with your wines?
It's difficult to answer, but I think it's the most special thing is when I can make wines that people drink. It's not only to say that it's fantastic wine, it's a bottle that I try to express in my wines. All the richness coming from the terroir, from the soil, and from the variety. And one special thing is the wine must be, obviously, with a lot of complexity, different notes, intensity, but for me, the most important thing is that people drink wine with food. For me, in terms of culture, the wine is made for to appreciate and to share with food. And this, my dream is when people, a couple in a restaurant, drink a bottle of my wine. That is the best thing for me. For Malbec, obviously, our most important wine in terms of image and probably volume too. We especially coming from Argentina, we drink our Malbec eating meat, typical barbecue, different cuts of meat is special with Malbec. But the Malbec is so round, soft, and with good acidity, and you can match with other dishes like pasta too, and with some pasta is going very, very well too. And the Semillon is for a lot of different sommeliers, they are using Semillon because it's with good intensity, good freshness, especially matching with the ceviche, some Peruvian food, and some spicy food too. Is going very well.
Excellent. How long do you think your wines will keep in the cellar, the Malbec, the Cabernet Sauvignon?
A lot of time, you know. I hope that could be as my father's wines. And the 77 I've tasted last week was great. And I think our wines with the kind of and quantity of tannin and structure that they have, and the good acidity is a wine that can age in bottle a lot of time. I think it's a wine to preserve and to age in your cellar for many, many years. And the Semillon too, the Semillon is a wine that age very, very well in bottle.
And a lot of Argentine whites do not do well over time, so that's something to look forward to. Roberto Lamota from Mendel Winery, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thank you, Roberto.
You are really lucky with and very friendly with me, and thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Makes me excited.
I know, I want to go so
drink
badly.
More of their wines. the thing that struck me, because I've been tasting a mountain of Argentine wine recently,
mm-hmm.
No big surprise to local listeners,
right?
Is the there are a number of Cabernet Franc. There are a number of interesting other varietals,
mm-hmm.
but there's a number of Cabernet Franc that are superb, really interesting aromatically, and good food flexibility, and
it's exciting.
You'll have to come drink some.
Yeah, and I would love to try a Semillon.
Maybe you'll need a glass or a bottle or two after we do the chef's challenge in the next segment.
Oh,
because
boy,
I know
really?
You'll,
are you threatening me?
I'm not threatening. I'm just promising a good challenge.
Okay.
Well, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, there will be a chef's challenge, and there's lots more to talk about on today's program. Right now, let's get back to the pledge room to talk about why it's so important to support public radio. And, of course, we'll take your pledges. Here's the number to call. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
This is the Pledge Drive edition. Thanks to everyone who's called in so far. And Cindy, I hope you're ready for your test.
My chef's challenge. You know I love a good chef's challenge,
oh,
Tony.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, Honeycrisp apples, wildflower honey, Berkshire pork chops. Love that. What is this word? Oh, olives. Fresh dill.
Castelvetrano olives.
Thank you. Salmon fillets, fennel, red onions. Red onions. I never work with red onions. Savoy cabbage, prosciutto, and pickled carrots.
You can name what type of prosciutto you want it to be.
I love prosciutto.
Could be prosciutto from Sardinia, which can be really, really good.
Yeah, so I pick prosciutto from Sardinia, and that will be thinly sliced and laid out on the plate because I want to eat some of that right now, and I will be eating that
You could have
I'm
that
cooking.
With a bottle of Mendel Semillon.
There you go.
That would
the
be
Semillon,
awesome.
I would like to have that. Thank you. And pickled carrots will be the garnish.
If you leave everything in the fridge and just take the prosciutto and the apples and the Semillon and take a picnic.
Exactly. And just leave. Go out to the farm. Go out onto the land. So pickled carrots and actually, let's see here. All right, so what do we have left? So that's the antipasta, the snack. And as we call a chef snack as well. Salmon fillets.
Chef snack includes a bottle of wine.
I'm going to grill the salmon because I love to grill when I'm at my house. So this is all these chef's challenges, I always look at it from the perspective that I'm at home, not in the restaurant. So grill the salmon and take a little bit of very fine julienne of the red onion, raw, and mix with a little bit of raw fennel, fresh lime juice, and finely chop the dill and mix it with a little bit of corn oil. Typically this would be, when I do something along this line, it would be extra virgin olive oil, but this is all very pretty tones and extra virgin will overpower it all. So just do a wonderful grilled salad with the Savoy cabbage. So the Savoy cabbage is going to be julienned. Okay. I'll toss it with that vinaigrette, basically. So the red onions, the fennel, the dill, the lime juice, and corn oil, and mix it all in with the Savoy cabbage. Grill the salmon fillets and slice them and lay them out on top of a salad. Just do a beautiful platter with all the greenery. And I would probably have some of the dill for garnish. And the tops of the fennel. What's that?
That is the most healthful thing you've ever done on a chef's challenge.
Oh, my goodness. And the fennel, the tops of the fennel are absolutely gorgeous. And I would absolutely put some of the tops in the salad as well as the body of the fennel. So everything's raw and fresh and gorgeous. And then the Berkshire pork chops, I'm also going to grill. I can have that salad ready to go. I could serve it cold. The salmon doesn't need to be hot. I could do that ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be nice to have the prosciutto and the pickled carrots first. And then do the Berkshire pork chops. And I'm going to take the Honeycrisp apples and the honey, and I'm going to just slowly cook down the apples with a little bit of butter and honey. And I actually might save a tiny bit of the fennel bulb and julienne that really, really fine, and also add that in because fennel and apples are really pretty together. And with the wildflower honey, which has a very specific flavor, that will be really beautiful with the chops, and just, you know, serve, again, the chops laid out, all this wonderful tons and tons of apples with the honey and the fennel. And then with the olives, I've kind of blown it with the olives, so they'll go back to the antipasta and be out with the... with the prosciutto and the pickled carrots.
I would totally eat the green olives with the pork with the honey.
Really?
And the apples, yeah, in a heartbeat. Hmm. To have like a bitter and salty thing to go along with the sweet notes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would, but I'm weird, you know.
All right, your turn.
Okay.
Did you just say you were weird?
We all know this. Okay.
All right.
Venison, Denver leg. Okay, carrots. I'm not going to insult your handwriting, but I'm going to guess that's parsnips.
Oh, boy.
Shallots, garlic, celeriac, pumpkin, cream, spices, basically conducive to pumpkin, brandy, eggs, purple potato, arugula, black beans, bacon, smoked ham hock.
I gave you some really good ingredients.
Yeah, you did give me some good ingredients. I think...
It's more of my list of ingredients than it is
yours.
Yeah,
this is more your list of ingredients. I think I want to make a soup. I want to make a ham hock stock. That's kind of an easy one.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make a pumpkin soup with all of those spices, the cinnamon, the nutmeg, the allspice, the star anise, and actually a decent dose of garlic and some of the shallots.
Mm-hmm.
Sweat those shallots to sweeten it up. Garlic as well. I'm not going to blanch it, but I'm going to sweat it because I want a little bit of the heat. And I'm going to make that pumpkin soup, and I'm hoping it's one of those big weird peanut pumpkins that has that really sweet flesh, so I'm hoping for good ones this year. But that with the ham hock flavor.
Wait, maybe, what did you call the pumpkin?
They have what looks like peanuts growing on the outside of them.
Oh, okay.
Literally, like little peanuts in the shell.
Now I know what you mean.
Okay. The bacon, I would crisp that up and maybe garnish the soup with the
mm-hmm.
bacon, and
mm-hmm.
I think that'd be worthwhile. The black beans. Maybe black beans and the purple potatoes as a salad with a little bit of the shallots as well. And a little carrot, just black beans blanched off and cooled down. I wish I had a little bit of tomato, just to add some acidity to
sure.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Really to the black beans, first and foremost. Not really as part of the salad so much.
Fresh tomato or tomato paste?
Fresh
or
tomato.
Puree?
Honestly, what I want are like little tart cherry tomatoes and a little bit of red wine vinegar.
Oh, that's right. You're making a salad.
To set that off, yeah.
You
cook those. You cool them in there. Mm-hmm. And their water a bit with the tomatoes and mirepoix, and then drain them, you know, after you've cooled them for a while. What else? The venison, I like roasting the venison like that, which is super lean. I like roasting in a pretty darn hot, heavy-duty pan, maybe steel pan, sear it off really well, finish in an oven that's not too hot, maybe 300, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
With good salt on the outside, slice that thin, serve that with the carrots and the parsnips. I'd love to make a gratin with those guys and the celery root as well. And you did give me cream, so I can do that. I'm going to go hunting for a Comté cheese or Reggiano or something along those lines.
That sounds good.
To serve with that. But that, the salad, the pumpkin soup with a little bacon garnish. You gave me a fresh arugula as well, so maybe wilt the arugula along with the venison to mm-hmm. go with the gratin. And I'm done.
I can't wait to start cooking venison.
It's
love
season.
It.
It's
yep,
season.
It's time.
Well, so I think that's about all we have time for. If you want to be in contact with the program, you can send us an email at foremanwolf@wypr.org. If you want to download podcasts of this program or any others from us, go to the WYPR website, where you could also pledge, and you can download podcasts there. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter, Chef Cindy Wolf, or on Instagram at Chef Wolf.
And we want you to have an awesome Sunday, and the pledge drive has just begun. It'll soon be done. When you tune at this time next week, there won't be any fundraising interruptions, just the great programs you've come to expect from WYPR. So now it's time to do your part and become a WYPR member. Here's how.